Today is Friday, April 12th, 2024. This is Quick Start from CBN News. I'm Dan Andros. O.J. Simpson is dead. We'll have that top story and more on today's podcast, where we bring you news from a Christian perspective. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating. You can email us as well, quickstartpodcast@cbn.org. We'd love to hear from you as we are all getting through the news of the cray each and every weekday morning, bright and early, including this one with Billy Hallowell and Trey Gones Phillips joining me. Guys, we got a bunch of stuff coming up, including we'll talk about OJ. We've got more as well from Hezbollah in the north. And the American flag was canceled at a Seattle dance competition. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's a funny story. It's not really a funny story, but it's wild to me that the American flag is something that's now controversial in the United States of America. So we'll get into the details of what happened to this dance club.
Wild times. Wild times we're living in here where the American flag is controversial. So we'll look forward to the details there. And on the main thing, as I mentioned, in northern Israel, they're facing Hezbollah up there. You've probably known about that. What you didn't know, likely, is that they are more sophisticated than people think. CBN's George Thomas has the details on that in the main thing. And don't forget, if you haven't already, to subscribe to all of our CBN News podcasts. Go ahead and do it now. DC Debrief, new episode drops today, once a week on Fridays with John Stolness, rounding up all the happenings in DC, and Newsmakers with Billy Hallowell, full-length interviews each and every weekday as well. Make sure you check those out. The links are in the description of this podcast. All right, we are going to head over now to the news in 90 seconds. In the family of Hall of Fame running back O.J. Simpson, they announced yesterday that the former star died after battling prostate cancer, prompting a mix of reactions from around the world on social media. He was 76 years old. Of course, he had an incredible professional football career, but all of that was marred after the trial and eventual acquittal in the 1994 killings of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and Ronald Goldman. And his family confirmed all of this in a statement posted on X. They said, on April 10th, our father, Orenthal James Simpson, succumbed to his battle with cancer. He was surrounded by his children and grandchildren. The family asked for privacy and grace during this, quote, time of transition. And OJ, after he had gone to prison, actually later in life, at a parole hearing, he presented himself and talked a little bit about his faith, that basically said he was leading a prayer group in a prison there, and said that he was always a good guy on the street, but he could have been a better Christian, was his quote. And the chances of finding Jillian Kelly, the 39-year-old pastor's wife, and Veronica Butler, 27, alive after they disappeared more than a week ago in Oklahoma after signs of foul play are growing, according to authorities, more challenging as time wears on without a break in the case. Those are just some of today's top headlines. You can check out more over at cbnnews.com. Prayer is definitely there for those families. Apparently there was a custody battle going on with a 6-year-old daughter and an 8-year-old son in regards to one of the women there that was missing. And so they were going apparently to pick up those kids. It was a 16-mile trip, but it ended 3 miles short. So definitely need to pray for the families there. And authorities did say there were signs of foul play at that scene where they found the car. So continued prayers in that situation. And then an interesting day here, guys, with the death of O.J. Simpson. I know I'm older than you two. I don't know what was going on in 1930. What year were you born, Trey? You're not
1992.
Okay, so you were two. Gosh. You were probably placed in
front
of the...
I was not watching The Chase.
Oh, you might have been. Your parents were probably watching it, and you were in the little play set going, look at the white Bronco running down the street.
That's possible.
Yeah, so... No, but it is a complicated day because the country's like mixed on this. It's really bizarre, guys. I mean, you see the gamut on social media. Some people saying, essentially, you know, pardon my language here, but just repeating what I'm seeing, rot in hell. And then you see others saying, rest in peace. And then, you know, you have quotes like he had after coming out of prison saying, you know, that he's talking about his faith. But at the same time, there was never any remorse. I mean, it was pretty obvious that he did it. You don't run away in a Bronco afterwards, and all of the other evidence that was there just because he was acquitted doesn't mean he didn't do it. I guess we'll never 100% know, but it sure looks like he did it. And there was no, in fact, it was just opposite. His behavior was odd in public after that. He just didn't seem like a person grieving the loss of his wife if he didn't do it. And it was just, the whole thing is just sad. And he ended up apparently having cancer, and it was, he didn't talk a lot about that in the last days, even though he was outspoken on social media. But I wanted to get your guys' just reaction to that and your thoughts on OJ. And there's some other things here. I have a clip from the White House that we can play, but I want to get your reaction first.
Well, you know, I also found it very curious that for somebody who pledged to track down the real killers who are, quote, out there somewhere, seems like that didn't really happen. There wasn't a quest to find them. That was, you know, something he was hoping he they were
lost.
After.
He was hoping they were in Las Vegas, I guess, because that's where he stayed most of the time.
You know, it's it is a really sad situation, and I want to be careful how I say this.
Yeah.
The hope is that every single person, no matter what they've done, no matter what's happened, would find hope in Christ and find salvation. The problem in this case, you know, you can talk all day about being, you know, you could have been a better Christian, you are a Christian, whatever you want to say, never ever admitting to something or addressing it ever. You know, it's just, it's a sad, sad situation. I don't know. I'm not God, but I do know the fruit of what we saw was somebody who never seemed repentant for the crime they allegedly committed.
Yeah. It's a sad story all around. I mean, I think everybody is comfortable with saying, even without, you know, hard and fast facts, that he did it. And the fact that it wasn't something that he, like you were saying, Dan, it wasn't something that he felt a lot of remorse for. But he did talk about faith, and it's hard to know, like, what's the takeaway for us there? Because if you're a believer who's been transformed by the Holy Spirit, I mean, there should be some fruit, and a major fruit would be some remorse and grieving and going through that process publicly, just like he went through the trial and all of that publicly. And there was no fruit that seemed to be born out of any sort of salvation publicly. You know, I don't know what happened behind closed doors with this family. None of us do. So at the end of the day, I don't care if you're the most evil person or the most moral person by our fallible standard. All of us are in need of a savior, and all of us have just as much access as the next to Jesus. So I hope he came to know Christ, but publicly, it doesn't seem like there was that fruit, which that's something that we should all mourn, whether he did commit the crimes that he was accused of or not.
Well, and it was an issue at that time. I mean, you had the Rodney King beating not long before that. And so racial tensions were high. And I remember I was watching this. I was in college at the time, and I was in the communications department. We were in the newsroom with other students, and we were just glued to it. I mean, there must have been 100 people there watching on the monitors to see what would happen. And I mean, America, the whole country. I mean, this is essentially what started Court TV, was this case. And people were glued to it. They wanted to know what would happen. And some people were celebrating when he was acquitted, and others were grieving it as an obvious miscarriage of justice. And I think what's emblematic of kind of the feelings of that day, on depending on which side you were on, is summed up in this Mark Lamont Hill tweet from yesterday. He said, "O.J. Simpson was an abusive liar who abandoned his community long before he killed two people in cold blood. His acquittal for murder was the correct and necessary result of a racist criminal legal system. But he's a monster, not a martyr." And I think that sums it up. I think everyone knows that OJ probably did it. There's a high chance that he did it. But then that was secondary to, we've got this justice system that doesn't do justice. And so for once, we want to see somebody that looks like me get acquitted of something instead of convicted of something. And that feeling just poured out. It poured out, and people were celebrating in the streets. And It's just sad that that's how people look at the system. And to be able to say something like that about justice, when clearly this is an injustice in this particular case, in this individual case, I think this shows the problem of this whole systemic line of thinking.
Yeah, I think one of the things that he said in other tweets after was that, you know, I don't want to misquote him, but that it had to do with the, that OJ got off because of racism in the process and the police and the things that were said. You know, I don't even understand. It's unfortunate that we even have to go back and relitigate all of these things because it was such a painful point for the country, right? This one case that became such a big thing. I don't know. The whole thing is sad. You've got his kids. I think about OJ's kids all the time, you know, who were in the house, I believe, when the crime happened. Yeah. You know, it's just, it is a heartbreaking scenario.
Yeah, it sure is.
I just wanted to ask out of curiosity to either of y'all, I would not recommend this for people to watch just based on obviously some of the subject matter and the just kind of gritty content, but did either of y'all watch the FX OJ Simpson series that came out several years ago, the mini series that came out a few years ago?
I did not.
I saw it. Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because like for my generation and people a little bit younger than me who were obviously not even alive during the OJ trial, it's just that story has lived on for generations. So it's interesting that people are coming at it from such different perspectives. Some people who lived through it and actually, like you were saying, Dan, saw all the case and saw the chase. And then people who are watching it kind of re-dramatized or have heard people talk about it. So it's interesting, I think, the conversations that'll probably happen this week about this case and remembering what it felt like emotionally for a lot of people. So, but that Mark Lamont Hill tweet, I think, is definitely very, very telling.
Yeah. And I think one thing that is certainly doesn't go away is for the families who lost loved ones in that horrific act. Yeah. And Fred Goldman, who's the father there, said, "The only thing I have to say about OJ dying is that it's further reminder of Ron being gone all these years." And he said, "It's no great loss to the world. It's a further reminder of Ron's being gone." So that's certainly somebody who's, again, an old wound open up. I mean, when you lose a loved one, they never really go away. They're always with you, but you know, you go on with life, but then it's a reminder, things like this that just keep bringing it up, that they could be there if things turned out differently. So, all right, well, we're going to head on over now to the focus story. And a dance team was told to change at an event because of their costumes. I'm almost afraid to ask, but what happened here?
So the Borderline dance team says that they have experienced a lot of emotions from, quote, what they described as the outrage to sympathy to disbelief. That's the range of emotion they said that they felt after being invited to perform at the Emerald City Hoedown in Seattle this past weekend. So they were invited to this dance event. And according to a post from the Borderline dance group on Facebook, they'd been asked to perform at this convention for the last 3 years, but were unable to make it for several of those years until this year. They finally were able to make it, schedules worked out. And when the group arrived, they arrived wearing their costumes for their routine, which were American flag shirts. Some were wearing, you can go and look up on CBN.com and even on our social media pages and see pictures. Half the team was wearing t-shirts that had white stars on them, and then the other half were wearing red and white stripes. So obviously when they all stood together, it looked like an American flag. But they were told by the Rain Country Dance Association, an LGBTQ+ dance community, that their stars and stripes made a small group of attendees at the convention uncomfortable. Borderline said in a statement they had several claims for this reasoning, most associated with the situation in Palestine, Gaza, Israel, and then the trans community in America. I'm not really sure what either one of them have to do with the American flag being offensive, but that was the reasoning that they were kind of given or that they deduced from this, the uproar that came over their t-shirts. And ultimately, the organization, the association there at the convention, really just gave them an ultimatum. They could change to completely different outfits, which would mean that the dance troupe would not be matching anymore. They would be wearing just whatever t-shirts they had, or they could leave.
I mean, my head is about to explode here, hearing you go through all of these details. For starters, I'll just say this before I hop off my soapbox, but this LGBT group that is very apparently fearful of living in America, They should try dressing in drag and doing all this other stuff in, I don't know, Saudi Arabia or maybe Pakistan.
Would not go over very well.
Yeah, see how it goes over there. So anyway, I digress. So why were they singled out of everyone there?
Yeah, so again, it was over the t-shirts, but they were not actually the only ones that were singled out. There was another dance team, West Coast Country Heat. They also had a patriotic themed routine. So similarly, they were wearing American flag themed, patriotic themed t-shirts, and they were actually by the association given the exact same ultimatum, which was change your t-shirt or you can just skip the competition altogether. And in the end, the two teams, the Borderline team and the West Coast Country Heat team, they decided actually to band together and put on what they called in a statement, quote, the greatest performance, which was that both teams just decided, well, if you're going to kick one of us out, you're going to kick both of us out. And both of them just decided, we're not going to do this. And they, you know, they weren't going to, they said, we don't want to sacrifice what we believe is important. He said, or one of the group organizers said, we have people of all different political persuasions, different beliefs on any number of things. And the American flag is something that should bring us all together. And if you're going to make the American flag something that's problematic, we don't really want to be here. So both teams decided just to leave together. And Borderline said in a statement, we all understood and accepted this, and we walked out with class and dignity despite the discrimination that we experienced.
Amen. Good for them. Has anything else been said since the walkout?
So there's been a little bit of confusion over how this all ended, about how this disagreement or how this situation was handled. So the group's board president clarified in a statement that she released to the Borderline group. They said that, or she said that the group was not asked to leave. However, the co-captain of the Borderline team, her name is Lindsay Stamp, she told talk radio host Jason Rantz that she absolutely disagreed with the board president. She said, I was there. I was in these conversations with the association, and we were given an ultimatum. I guess they could have said they weren't forced to leave because they were allowed to completely disregard their outfits. But she said, for all intents and purposes, we were invited to just leave because nobody wanted us to do the routine that we were prepared to do.
That's like the vaccine mandate, the excuse that they tried to give that ended up getting demolished in court. That whole, well, I mean, you're free to stay. You just have to get the jab, you know, like,
right.
No, you're giving me an ultimatum. You're not giving me a choice. So that's they, it sounds very much like they had an ultimatum given to them. So why do you think this one's worth putting on the radar? Because I mean, I have my thoughts on it, but I want to hear yours.
Well, I think it's good. I appreciate that the two teams came together and they said, look, we have people of all different perspectives. The American flag should be something that unifies us, not divides us. And I think it's important that they stood together on that principle. And they said, look, we're a country of all kinds of different perspectives. The American flag used to be something that represented a diverse, you know, range of views, all under the same umbrella of being American. And there was pride, whether you were a Democrat or a Republican, I think people were generally proud to be Americans. That's not the culture that we're living in now. There's a lot of shame that is supposed to be associated with somebody who's proud of the American flag. Something that I've seen over the years growing up, just watching, especially in presidential election years like this year, is it used to be everybody had American flags out next to their rally sign for whichever presidential candidate they liked. Now, really, I've heard so many people say, oh, they've got an American flag out in their front yard. They must be Republicans. I think what a sad statement of where we are as a country.
Yeah, it really is. And it's a frustrating thing to me, kind of what you were saying about why people are using the flag as their frustration point, because that shouldn't be what you're mad at. The flag represents, as you said, the idea of America. It doesn't mean everything is perfect in our country at a given time. What it means is we have the ability as a people to progress and improve as we go forward, which has clearly been evidenced given the fact that we started in slavery. And so people now today are trying to make it so you say you're ashamed of America because there was slavery here at one time, when in reality, you should be like, no, America started with slavery, just like many other countries around the world had slaves. And because of the American ideal, because we have the ability to change things here in America as we the people, it's gotten better. We got rid of slavery. We got rid of segregation. And now some people are trying to bring it back. But you, generally speaking, the flag gives us that chance, the opportunity, at least the hope to make things better. Whereas most other countries don't even have that. That's what you unite behind. You're not uniting behind a person that loves the flag more than someone else. It's America. It's the ideal. And it's very frustrating that people take that out on the flag itself. That should be the most unassailable thing that we have uniting us, no matter what your views are on the left or the right. You should say, look, we have the opportunity here in America to have the battle of ideas. We're allowed to criticize our government. Although it gets harder and harder now with certain people in there sending the DOJ at you and whatnot, there's instances. But generally speaking, you have the opportunity to criticize the government. You're not going to get thrown out of a window like Vladimir Putin does to his critics. So that's my frustration point on that. And I think that's why it's important, because, no, you need to respect the flag and the ideals behind it. It doesn't mean we're a perfect country.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And I think the only... I maybe wouldn't even use the word progress as a country, right? I think the flag represents, and some of this is because we've gotten away, unfortunately, from absolute moral truth, which is insane, but we have. We now live in such a relativistic world. But to me, the flag represents these, we're tethering ourselves to these morally absolute truths, which are, of course, found in the Bible, right? The Old Testament, the Ten Commandments are kind of the, we were just talking the other day, that's the foundation of our justice system. And the flag represents that's our home base, that's our foundation, and we're going to get better at applying those truths, right? Because we're humans and we're fallible. So we had these ideals of moral truth, and we unfortunately didn't live by them for many years when we had slavery, and we didn't live by them for many years when we didn't let women have access to voting and all of that. But we've gotten progressively better at applying these absolute truths, and I think that's something to celebrate. And that is really the reminder that I get when I look at the American flag. But because we live in such a relativistic world now, I think there are people who are saying we need to get away from these absolute truths. Now, in practice, they don't actually want to get away from them, but they like to say they want to get away from them. And I think that's what's caused a lot of the division we have with our flag and also many more important things.
It certainly is. It certainly is. But appreciate you bringing that one to the podcast today. We have to move along in the interest of time here to our main thing. And Israel's facing an increasingly sophisticated enemy in the north, in Hezbollah. A lot of people don't know this about Hezbollah. You kind of picture them as ragtag and just haphazardly launching attacks. And that's not exactly the case, as CBN's George Thomas found on today's main thing.
Toby Abutbol knows just how fortunate he is to be still alive. February 13th at 11:08 in the morning, Abutbol was driving down Main Street in Kiryat Shmona, a city in northern Israel near Lebanon's border, when his car's dash cam captures the moment a Hezbollah missile lands a few feet away from him.
I was driving on the streets of the city and an anti-tank missile hits right in front of me with no warning. There wasn't even a siren sound warning of an incoming missile.
He immediately stops, puts his car in park, turns on the hazard lights, jumps out and takes cover behind his car. 10 seconds later, the second missile hits, injuring a mother and her child. And then come the sirens. 3 months earlier, on November 2nd, Hezbollah launched a barrage of 12 missiles at northern Israel, two of the missiles hitting right next to Abutbol's restaurant. Surveillance video shows the moment his father and two siblings enter the family restaurant and the missile's impact fling them to the floor, but not seriously injured.
It was scary. My little sisters and father were here with me, but we quickly got into the bunker and we understood that there's no room for playing games. This is very serious.
5 months later, he's nervous about what's coming.
I believe Israel and Hezbollah are going to go to war.
The traffic lights here in downtown Kiryat Shmona are blinking.
because there's, as you can see, hardly any traffic to speak of. It's a scene that is played out pretty much all along the Israel-Lebanon border. Some 60,000 Israelis forced to evacuate from cities like this. But you know, back in 2006, when Israel and Hezbollah were last at war, the circumstances and the situations were much different. And today, Hezbollah is a much more powerful army.
What is different about this conflict compared to 2006?
Hezbollah is different. Hezbollah is much stronger, mm-hmm. much more munition, accurate missiles, and a capability of invasion.
Former IDF intelligence officer Sarit Zahavi is a leading expert on Hezbollah. She's tracked the various weapons being used by the terror group here in the north since October 8th, the day after the Hamas massacre. In addition to more than 3,000 rockets, Zahavi says for the first time, Hezbollah began firing more advanced Iranian-made weapons like the Almas-1 anti-tank guided missile.
Long flying, short range, very accurate, no alerts, no Iron Dome cannot intercept
Israel
this.
Israel cannot protect itself from the infrared.
Only if they are launched against tanks, but they are usually launched against everything else. Everything, not just correct. Everything. Correct. Civilian, military, whatever. Yeah.
In January, Hezbollah released this video reportedly showing an Alma-1 with a camera attached to its nose targeting an IDF intelligence base.
Instead of a terrorist organization, we are facing a terrorist army. Army that has around 200,000 different kind of missiles, drones, rockets, mortars, different types, can get to everywhere in Israel.
Hezbollah is also believed to have about 100,000 fighters.
Hundreds of Hezbollah terrorists took part in what they described as a military maneuver.
The so-called tip of Hezbollah's spear is the Radwan force, an elite squad of up to 3,000 fighters focused on infiltrating Israel's northern border.
Since they participated in the civil war in Syria, their ground forces are much more professionals, much more equipped, and even, you know what, even motivated to carry out the ground invasion because, you know, during the years, Hezbollah mobilized them that this is their mission.
IDF released video of a strike in South Lebanon that allegedly took out a senior Radwan commander. Fighter jets also struck a reported Radwan military compound.
Since Hezbollah opened the northern front against Israel, IDF attacked 4,000 targets in Lebanon. 10% of these are against the commando units of Hezbollah. This is a very impressive number.
Zahavi says a major challenge the IDF would face in a full-scale war would be trying to identify Hezbollah foot soldiers and weapons depots. As CBN discovered on a recent trip inside South Lebanon, the terror group is very adept at hiding within the civilian population.
Hezbollah, like Hamas, is entrenched in the villages using the Lebanese human shields. Everything you saw happening in Gaza with regard to hiding the munition in the hospitals and in the mosques and in the homes, it exists the same way with Hezbollah.
Israeli military has announced it's preparing to move from defense to attack regarding operations on the northern border. Experts predict war between Hezbollah and Israel is likely within the next 6 to 8 months.
I know the IDF is here. Yeah. I know that we are much more prepared than we used to be. But yet I'm worried.
Zahavi's home here in northern Israel sits less than 5 miles from Hezbollah military positions.
We are not willing to sleep next to this monster anymore. We want the threat to be dealt because what we have learned that once they have the capability to slaughter us, eventually they will use this capability. The only way to fight this is to try to eliminate or at least damage as much as possible this capability.
George Thomas, CBN News, Northern Israel.
All right, George, thanks so much for that report there. We got the link in the description. You can watch that video. Very, very compelling stuff from George Thomas. All right, that's going to leave us with time on the pod for one last thing.
We're going to look at Psalm 34:14. It says, "Turn away from evil and do good, seek peace and pursue it." I think that's a good reminder with several of the stories we've had on today.
Sure is. Good spot as any to leave it here on this Friday edition of the Quick Start Podcast. As always, make sure you're getting on over to cbnnews.com and faithwire.com for more news from a Christian perspective. Lord willing, and that creek don't rise on us. We'll be back here Monday with more. God bless. See you then. Have a great weekend.